How would you like to survive and thrive after sexual abuse? Darlene Lukowski will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Darlene is she's a speaker, author, business leader, and survivor who turned her decades of silence into a powerful journey of truth, healing, and courage. And after bravely revealing the sibling sexual trauma and abuse she endured and winning a civil lawsuit brought by her own brother, she now helps others find their voice. Her memoir, Shattering Silence, A Story of Survival, Justice, and the Power of Telling the Truth, is available on Amazon. So, Darlene, tell us about how can someone survive and thrive after sexual abuse?
Heal podcast with Lily Patrascu shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest, best life ever. Shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.
I really believe for me and many others, it's about letting go in order to live forward. And the reason I say this is because, you know, I was sexually abused at a very young age. I was abused starting at the age of 7. And from 7 to 12, my two oldest brothers, who were supposed to protect their little sister, instead were sexually assaulting me. So I took all of that trauma and I shoved it in a box and I buried it deep inside my soul, thinking that it would not hurt me. But looking back 50 years later, that box leaked all my entire life. I didn't know I had PTSD until I was 58 years old. And so to thrive after trauma is to let go of everything that took you to survive. I had to let go of the anger, the bitterness. I was really angry that my own brother, who should have apologized, ended up suing me. But then I looked at everything and I was like, I'm still reactive to everybody and everyone that I love. And if I continue down this path, I will be alone and I will realize all the threats that they gave me. So the only way to live forward after trauma is to let it go and do what is right for you and your soul.
Thank you. First, were you able to prove that it really happened? Because I think one pain that someone can have after actually experiencing the pain itself of the abuse or the trauma is perhaps not being believed or not being able to prove to the world. And I think that can be more painful in itself sometimes than the actual thing, like for people closest to you, like perhaps your parents or, I don't know, your family or your relatives, your, you know, people you're closest to, that if they don't believe you, if you feel like so betrayed, were you able to prove?
I was able to prove, but it wasn't through family members. For me, I grew up in a pretty wealthy upper middle class neighborhood north of Detroit, Michigan. We were the country club crowd. It was the 1970s. Nobody talked about their abuses. Nobody opened up. And I just knew for me that my parents would have hidden it had I told. And my mom owned a Christian bookstore. I know for a fact it would have killed her. So I personally chose that my parents were never to find out. I believed my brothers when they said, you're going to be the one to destroy the family. You're going to be the one that's going to be the black sheep, all of the things that the abuser says. But what happened to me, Lily, is, you remember how I mentioned the PTSD moments? So it is those times I let people inside the box, girlfriends. The first time I had sex, I bawled because I wasn't a virgin. So I told my boyfriend at 17, 18, what had happened to me. And other times I was on a dance floor and somebody touched me the wrong way and I flipped out. That was a trauma response. And my girlfriends thought somebody put something in my drink. And so what happened is every single time I told, thank God, I was believed. It was my girlfriends. It was psychiatrists and therapists. And those girlfriends saved my life because all six of them testified for me on the stand saying, yes, She told me this 20 years ago. Yes, I believed her. And yes, she told the truth.
Thank you. So how does someone get the courage to survive and thrive, to kind of find the determination, the courage, the boldness to kind of live a joyful life after a significant trauma? Like, what would someone do to get there?
Yeah, I think that for me, and I'm thinking for your listeners as well, it's really looking out at what are you doing today that is no longer serving you. So for me, if I was in control, I didn't get sexually assaulted. If I was never alone, I didn't get sexually assaulted. I had vowed at 9 years old, those two brothers were never going to see me fail. But then when you take all those survivor skills into your adult life, to the ones that you love and care about, if you always have to win, your husband is your opponent, your children are your opponents. And it took a huge PTSD moment with my daughter where my brain converted her to my rapist brother, and I ended up hitting her and punching her in the head. And that was a huge wake-up call for me. And so, what, hate to say it, but sometimes we have to do this. We have to look within and say, maybe some of my behaviors are not working. And I had to turn it around and say, what do I need to stop these behaviors? And so I did a lot of therapy. I went to EFT tapping. I went to EMDR therapy, non-traditional therapies. And I think that's how a lot of people can survive and thrive. And you don't have to go public like I did. Start a journal, write it down, and tell someone. To thrive later on is to tell somebody and not keep it in the box. Because the only way you're going to have hope and joy in your life is to open that box and let people you trust in.
Thank you. Would you have any sort of like blueprint for someone who is to survive and thrive after sexual abuse in terms of like the kind of steps they would take? Aside from overcoming repressed anger, are there any other steps in terms of like becoming more joyful that you currently do, self-love, or any other steps that you can tell us about that are the pillars to going from being almost like a victim to being again in control of your circumstances and managing to not turn every person into an adversary and not see negativity in every situation and not see the negative side of everything?
Yeah, I think the number one step, I believe it, is letting go of the shame. As abuse victims, we take on the shame, and the shame is not ours to carry. And I had that shame for 50 years. And by letting go of the shame, and even my daughter said to me, Mom, I hear you, I believe you, but it sounds like you haven't forgiven yourself first. And we need to know, step one, this is not our fault. We did not do this to ourselves. Step two is we can't control what was done to us, but we can control what we do with it. And so I think understanding that sometimes you need to take that step, breathe, be responsive to what's going on rather than reactive. That would be really step three. And some of the therapy techniques that I did allowed me to be calmer. You know what I mean? My son called me the other day and he ended up hanging up on me. The traumatized Darlene would have gotten on the phone and screamed and yelled and, how dare you hang up on me? You know? But then when I sat and I took a breath and I relaxed, all I needed to do then was just to say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what I said, and can you forgive me? And those are just some of the steps. Oh, go ahead, Lily.
Yes, I was going to say, how do you become a person who stops finding negative people and abusers attractive? What I mean by that is because I personally come from a traumatic childhood. My grandma used to beat me every day from 4 years old until 18, and she used to say that I was stupid, ugly, and fat. although I was the first in my class and my average was 9.81 out of 10. And she was really upset that I didn't get 10 out of 10. So she would beat me for it every day. And she would punch me against the wall and she would threaten me and she would, you know, beat me with nettle leaves just to leave marks on my skin and throw me, you know, she would pull me by the hair and this kind of thing. So, I mean, I know what it feels like to be in a traumatic situation. And I'm wondering, like, how does someone stop? You know, like, when you are a person who has suffered a lot of abuse and trauma, you may find that you are attracted to what is familiar. And what is familiar, let's say, in our cases, is traumatic people, people that are likely to abuse us. And we might find even like a certain chemistry with these kind of people that might treat us badly. And perhaps we might find that people who are like genuinely kind and nice and they don't trigger us. And they maybe we have less chemistry with the kind of people that are likely to be kind to us. So how do we stop finding the abusers attractive? And how do we find, stop basically finding the abusers familiar and start being attracted to good people?
Yeah, I think that takes a lot of time and a lot of therapy. And I will be honest with you, I made the mistake in my first marriage. I married somebody just like my abuser. Now, he didn't abuse me, but his personality was the same. And if you read about him and my story, you'll see the characteristics. And for years, Lily, I said to myself, I'm not good enough. I don't deserve this love. And that's really going back to the first step. The only way to find people in your life that you deserve is to stop blaming yourself, to forgive yourself, and to say, I do deserve love. I do deserve this person. For years, I sabotaged every good person that came in my life. And so it was through therapy, it was through self-love, it was through letting go of the shame and saying, and now I'm married to my second husband, and he is the complete opposite, and I was able to get through that self-defamation, if you would, or, you know, and I really was able to identify the characteristics in my second husband that I deserved that kind of love. I deserved that kind of person. And I have been happily married now for 14 years in my second marriage because I finally forgave myself so that I could open up joy and hope and love.
Thank you. Tell us some ways that you cultivate joy and self-love in yourself and your relationship. And what did you do exactly to attract that kind of self-love for yourself? Because I think it can be very hard to accept your worth when you have been abused. So for example, I remember when when I was really young, my grandma used to beat me for even taking a flower from the garden, or she would put me to sit on like walnut shells and she would punch me against the wall just for like taking a flower from the garden. And I just kind of started feeling like I'm not worth it. Like I'm not good enough. Like anything I do is not good enough and I'm never going to be good enough and I'm not smart enough and I'm too chubby and I'm too this and too that. So how did you make that shift, that mindset shift to cultivate more love and joy in yourself? What kind of practical steps did you take? Are you doing affirmations? Are you sipping your coffee in the morning and really appreciate the little things? Do you have more gratitude? Or what other amazing steps did you take to get there?
Sure. I mean, honestly, the first step I took was non-traditional therapy. There's a gentleman by the name of Rich Nisbet, and I can give it to you after this call if you want, that really helped me understand that I had a reactive mind. So for example, I get bit by a German Shepherd at 5 years old. My entire adult life, I was terrified of German Shepherds. And only through talking through the reactive mind and the questions he was asking me was I able to let go of that fear. For years, I was afraid of the dark. I couldn't be alone in any house. And so through therapy of going, I don't need to be afraid of the dark. The EFT tapping that I mentioned, the 9D breath work, every single non-traditional therapy that I used helped me along that path. But to your point, Lily, I also had to do affirmations. Every morning I get up and I say, what are the three things that I am joyful about? What are the three things that I love about myself so that I can open up my heart to let others in? And then finally, you know, with the lawsuit, I was getting sued and I was spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that was stressing me out as well. And I had to say, I can't worry about the money because I know the truth will win. And last year was the most successful year I had by having that affirmation in my calendar every single Friday morning that said the lawsuit and the fees will get paid back to me in miraculous ways.
Thank you. What can someone do who has, let's say, repressed anger, aside from going to therapy? Are there any little steps that you have taken to manage your anger? So, for example, let's say if someone doesn't come to my podcast, okay, like I'm cool about that. The reason I'm cool about that is because I booked my podcast back to back for 12 hours. If someone doesn't come, then that gives me an hour to actually eat. You know, it's no big deal. But yeah, let's say if my lover doesn't come, you know, and doesn't tell me he's not going to come, then I have such immense rage and I don't know how to control that, you know? And there's certain things that really trigger me. And I mean, they really trigger me to the point of like, I'm, you know, just wanting to burst into these like expletives, and like I have this rage that I cannot control. And there's other things that I'm really, really chilled about. And I'm wondering, like, how does someone manage their anger when they have so much repressed anger from being mistreated in the past?
For me, it was a mindset shift. You know, I had to look within and realize, what is the bitterness doing for me? What is the anger doing for me? And every single thing that I was doing, especially during the 2 years going to the trial, Lily, every single thing was focused on him. And you're right, I was angry, I was resentful, I was so uptight, and I had to turn it around and go, well, that's not serving me, that's serving what he did to me. And by changing your mindset, I have to say to myself every single day, what does control do for me? What does yelling and screaming do for me? And when I feel those hairs rising on the back of my neck that I'm going to burst and scream and yell, I literally look around the room and ground myself to present time. Because a lot of the reactive mind, you're going back to the past. You're remembering everything that happened to you. And you really have to stay focused in present time as to what I need to be able to be happy now. And so by doing that, I am no longer uptight. So it's so funny you mentioned the canceling of plans. I was on vacation last week. My plans got canceled. Somebody stopped dinner reservations. And normally I would flip out because I had to be in control. Like, how dare they do that? That is so rude to me. That is so offensive to me. But instead, I said, why do I care? Why do I care that my plans were changed? Did it hurt me? No. And so when you have the different mindset of it's okay to sit back, it's okay to be present time and really slow down, that's what I have to do every single day. Remind myself to slow down and understand and think about what matters to me and what I'm going to do to have the loving people in my life around me. And it's not being reactive. It's not being angry. It's not being bitter. It's not being in control either. It's not surviving. Every single thing I did, I can't do that anymore in my adult life. It was literally killing me.
Thank you. Do you ever find yourself regretting that perhaps you didn't fight back? Because, for example, when I was young, my grandma used to beat me, and I never, not even one time, I never tried to fight back. I never tried to like talk back or kind of like to run, or like literally I was sitting there like a lamb, like a helpless person. And I think that I mean, I did that for so long and I just acted helpless because it felt like the safest way to act. But now, let's say if someone was to hurt me verbally or physically, I know that I would be like a boxer, you know? And I can feel the anger kind of resurfacing, and it kind of reminds me, it's almost like payback time from that time when I didn't fight back. And I'm wondering, like, how can someone stop bringing the past trauma back in, and kind of especially when they regret not fighting back in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I think all trauma victims look back to see how they didn't react. I mean, for me, I did scream, but other times I froze. To your point, other times I was like, well, this is going to happen again. The less I fight, the less I will get hurt. You know that. And you know, the less you push back. So I did stay quiet for many, many years, and it stopped at age 12. But then at 19, one of the brothers came back to me and said, let's do what we used to do. And I was old enough to know better at that time. I don't think we can blame ourselves as children for not fighting back. The way we responded was a trauma response. But at 19, I said, no more. Don't ever talk to me about this again. Don't ever come near me again. And it stopped. And it didn't happen again. We never even brought it up again until I was in my 40s. And I said to him, hey, I really need this out. So I was looking for an apology, Lily. And I think maybe that sometimes can help if you're talking with family members still. If you have conversations, I went to my brother and I just said, you know, I believe you did this to me. Can you please confirm? And he said, oh, I didn't think it bothered you that bad. And that was an awful response for me. It kind of brought me back into my trauma. Like, how dare you feel this way and do this? And so I just said, you know what? He's never going to apologize. He's never going to forgive. And then in 2021, after my mom passed away and my dad had dementia, my box burst wide open. And instead of getting that apology I was longing for and hoping for, he handed me a lawsuit.
Thank you. Tell us about forgiveness and the role of forgiveness in moving on and in living a truly joyful life after abuse.
Yeah, so I have two brothers who abused me. The one 9 years older than me, I did speak to him after it became public with the other brother. My other brother was going around telling everybody I'd had a nervous breakdown and I had gone crazy and all of this stuff. And I talked to him and I said, hey, Dave, I know that you did this to me. Can you please confirm it? And he did say he was sorry. He did apologize. And because he was able to be a man and say that he did those things, that did give me a great deal of release. The forgiving was extremely helpful. But then the two brothers, when the one sued me, they ended up banding together and said, okay, we're going to go against Darlene. She's a liar. She's not telling the truth. And for me, forgiveness wasn't in the cards because I got handed that lawsuit. And so I had to stand up and not be afraid and know the truth was on my side to take the stand. So what I ended up having to do, Lily, in order to let go of this, was I ended up forgiving myself. If I'm not going to forgive the perpetrator, it's not. I mean, now he's thrown me in a court system. I'm on the stand. And so sometimes I think you can forgive your perpetrator, but I don't think everybody has to forgive. I think it's how you decide what you need to do to move your life forward. And for me, it was forgiving myself.
Thank you. Did you ever find any relief? Because I find that sometimes when you don't forgive and when you have a lot of anger, it starts to hurt your own body. It's almost like pouring boiling water or poison in your own body. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering whether you found you found yourself in better health and you started enjoying yourself more after forgiving yourself?
Absolutely. You know, I think what was happening to me is it was almost, even though the box had blown wide open, I was still living in that box. I was still shoving all the people that I loved away, and I wasn't letting any of the good in. And so what I was able to do after forgiving myself, and this is not my shame, this is not my burden to carry anymore, my children have told me I'm a completely different person. My husband has said, you are not argumentative anymore like you used to be. You are calm. You are at peace. And we can totally see the difference that forgiving yourself has done. And I got to tell you, Lily, writing my book also became incredibly cathartic. You know, I had my trauma as a little child. I lived my trauma for 2 years going to the trial, and then I wrote my trauma down. And every single time I speak about what happened about me, I write down what happened about me, I go on podcasts like yours, I heal just a little bit more. And I really believe as survivors, when we open up that box and talk about it to anybody, you heal a little bit more.
Thank you. Tell me some of the best things that happened as a benefit of you having to go through this terrible abuse. And then what I'm talking about is, for example, my grandma mistreated me so bad. And then my mom, she had a husband and he used to beat her up. But because of it, I am not living in Romania anymore. And because of it, my mission now is to impact 100 million people to be happier, to go after what they want, to tell the stories in books that transform the world. And because of it, I'm speaking at global family office investment summits around the world and I get invited. And because of it, I meet extraordinary entrepreneurs like you. And because of it, like, I feel like I matter. And I'm wondering whether there's any positive impact you've noticed in your life.
Absolutely. You know, I almost became two different personalities. And I don't know if you can relate, Lily. I had the little girl who was traumatized, who I shoved in that box and wanted to keep that dark, dirty secret buried for the rest of my life. But to your point, some of the survival skills that I used really did help me grow and become the type of business leader that I am today. You know, I'm in sales and marketing, and I'm a public speaker as well. And if you had that postulate of, I'm always going to win, that's really good when you're in sales. You know what I mean? So that did become a positive experience. And that postulate of, I'm never going to let these brothers see me fail, that became a huge moment for me that I was always going to overcome. And I also think as survivors, we have characteristics that we have built innately in us that helps us be the leaders we were meant to be. I think we're stronger. I think we are better prepared for whatever happens in the world. We get knocked down time after time after time again. And I know how to stand up and fight back and move life forward. So those are a lot of the positive things. I became a very successful salesperson in banking for 35 years. But I had to still take it to the next level. I had gotten here, and the only way to get here and be elevated, to be able to find my purpose. My purpose is to no longer have sibling sexual trauma and abuse a taboo word. I no longer want incest to be something that little boys and girls feel like they have to hide. The only way to do that is to get out there and speak publicly and talk about it. Because if I'm out there talking about it, maybe others are not going to be afraid to tell their stories either. And then the world will become a better place because we're stopping the taboo of sibling sexual trauma and abuse.
Thank you. Tell me, what did you notice about yourself as a positive element, as a, you can say, as a positive thing that happened because of the sexual abuse. For example, in my case, I realized actually I have a warrior mindset. I have a champion and winner mindset. I am unflappable. I am unbreakable. Like I'm so resilient. And I can walk 20 kilometers. It means nothing to me. Okay. Like I can do so much. And for example, when I was doing like property renovation projects, I can last an entire day without eating anything and I'll be fine. I'll be like, okay, if I don't have to eat today, I'm good as long as I'm doing the project. So I have such immense resilience, and most people would be like, you know, after 2 hours, they're like, oh my God, I'm hungry. Oh my God, I'm thirsty. Oh my God, I have to sit down, you know? And I'm wondering, what did you notice about yourself after this immense trauma?
Yeah, the resiliency is innate. I am the type of person that will never, ever give up. And, you know, I'm in sales. So if you don't like it in red, well, let me show you what it's like in blue. If you don't like it in blue, let me show you what it's like in purple or pink. So that, as well as I know that I have the truth on my side. And I think that's very important for your viewers to understand. When you know the truth, believe the truth, believe in yourself. And when you're able to elevate who you are, I am the strongest person I ever thought I could ever be. You talked to me 5 years ago, I would have never told you I was going to become a public speaker. I would have never told you I was going to write a book. But it just elevated me to the point where I said, I'm not a victim. I'm a survivor. I'm going to be thriving. And not only am I doing all of these steps to heal me, I'm going to be out there in my new purpose and helping others. And I'm strong and I'm a warrior and I am believed and I am no longer alone.
Thank you. What would be one thing that entrepreneurs or people who have experienced abuse, what would be one thing they could do to break the cycle of abuse? Is it to have like a mindset shift? Is it to take a certain action? Is it to have more self-love? Is it something else? What could they do, like that first step to break that cycle?
Yeah, I think for entrepreneurs, it's, you know, I hate to say it, but I felt that I was perfect. Because if I was perfect, if I was hypervigilant, if I was expert at everything, then I wasn't going to get abused. And I don't know if, Lily, you've kind of felt the way in your trauma too. If I was here, but as entrepreneurs, if you're on the top and everybody else is underneath you, that doesn't work. As leaders, we have to have communication. We have to open up and have conversations with people. So it's not about being perfect. You have to let go of the perfection. You have to ask questions. The first step is understanding what I need to do to solve my client's problem or understand what their goals and objectives are, because I'm not perfect. I can't be perfect. Does that make sense what I'm saying, Lily?
Yes. And how does someone stop the cycle of self-abuse? Because what you'll find is that whenever there is no proof of abuse from other people, when people actually start being kind, I have found in my case that I self-abuse. And what I mean by that is self-criticize. I would be like, okay, I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm probably not going to be accepted for this proposal that I'm going to send. Therefore, I'm not going to send it at all. Have you ever experienced that? And how do you change this?
Yeah, I think it's the self-postulates. I think it's reading books, you know, like Glennon Doyle. That helped me a lot. You know, Mel Robbins with the Let Them book. It's really a mindset shift. It's every day getting up and having that cup of coffee before you go to work on your back porch and saying, what is my self-worth? I know that I am strong. I know that I am good. I know that I have the truth on my side. And you have to tell yourself these affirmations every single day. But in addition to that, almost do two pieces of paper. What am I good at? What am I strong at? And what can I shed from the behaviors that I'm doing every day so that I can be that bigger, stronger person. And it's a daily chore for me to shed the resentment and the anger. It's not a one-day experience where I just say, oh, I'm throwing it out. I'm going to let it go today. It's every day reminding yourself you are beautiful, you are loved, you are smart, and people enjoy being around you.
Thank you. For me, what happened is I changed my environment. I moved from Romania to London. And in London, everyone was saying, you're excellent. Like anything I did. And initially, I was working as a nanny and I was cleaning houses. And everyone was like, oh my God, you were excellent. Oh my God, can you also come here? And so I was like getting referrals all over the place. And I was so shocked. It felt almost like it was touching my heart so much to hear that, because nobody had said it before. And all I had heard while in Romania was like, you're crap, you're bad, you don't know what you're doing, this is not good enough. And it felt so touching to hear you're excellent, like every time. It was such an amazing thing. And for a really long time, it was hard to accept as well. I was just thinking, no, you must be kidding. And but with time, you know, like if you hear it long enough from different people, you kind of start to accept it yourself. Did you find that as well in your own environment as well, that your entire kind of like environment changed and you were getting appreciated more and more and more, and that also helped towards your healing?
Absolutely. I mean, it really took me going public to really do that shift. And like I said, your viewers don't need to go as public as I did, but I'm telling you, every single thing that I thought people would hate me over and they would be disgusted by me over, oh, you were abused. Oh, it was a brother. Oh, it was two brothers. You know, I didn't tell my children until I was in my late 50s. You know, each husband I told when they wanted to marry me that because I didn't think I deserved to be married. You know, and every single time I told those fiancés or boyfriends or girlfriends or even my children, they opened up the doors, they opened up love, and every single thing that I was so afraid of, they were like, why didn't you tell us sooner? Mom, we get you now. We understand why you were so controlling in our lives and so overwhelming to us. And even in business situations, like I would have a review and if it wasn't perfect, I could feel the tears welling up in my eyes. How can I not be perfect? How can I not? Because I have done everything to build this separate Darlene. And it's through understanding you, perfection is not resilience. Resilience is standing up and fighting back. And so through all of those things, I learned the only way to heal and to have the people that I love in my life was to tell them my story and to let it all go.
Thank you. Now, when I look at you, what I see is a beautiful, gorgeous, intelligent, successful woman. And I'm wondering whether when you look in the mirror, do you also see that? Like, do you fully appreciate yourself for who you've become?
I do now. I'm telling you, I do now. It took 25 years, 35 years to get there. And that's really, Lily, why I'm out there telling my story. And thank you for the compliments. You make me feel great. But you're right. It's the self-love. It's every day looking in the mirror and telling yourself, I got this. I'm not who I used to be. I'm not who those brothers labeled me as. I'm not afraid. I'm not ashamed. And I do think a lot of it, of the self-love, was just getting it out in the trial and the stand and telling my story to the world.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs and people worldwide can connect with you.
Sounds great. I am on Instagram at Darlene Lukowski. I also have a website, darlene-lukowski.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn under Darlene Lukowski, speaker, author, and Facebook, Darlene Lukowski. And then as you mentioned, my memoir, Shattering Silence, A Story of Survival, Justice, and the Power of Telling the Truth, is out on Amazon and anywhere you buy your books online.
Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health change makers to live your healthiest life ever.